Okay, whenever you're ready.
Yeah.
Whoop. Sorry. I want to wreck your stuff.
Watch your head and your feet.
Well, I'm looking through this little tiny square, right?
And...
So often we'll get schools of them kind of at the pond apron here. So I was hoping that would be the case so you could get some footage, but because it's sunny out, they might be further out towards the edges.
What do we have?
So these are walleye ponds. This is kind of a traditional way of raising walleye for stocking purposes, certainly in Wisconsin and the rest of the Midwest. So the vast majority of walleye raised in aquaculture are done in ponds just like this. Raising walleye in ponds like this is kind of challenging because you're subject to the weather conditions and a lot of predators outdoors that you can't really control for. So we kind of stock our fish in there shortly after hatch and more or less hope for the best while following best practices. We fertilize our ponds so that we get a good algae growth and zooplankton hatch for those fish to consume. And then eventually we'll be trucking in minnows to feed them as they get to the size where they can start consuming larger fish. And then by October, they should be roughly 9 inches and ready to stock out into the lakes. So
when did they start feeding on other fish?
Very shortly. So they, as soon as they can fit another fish in their mouth, ultimately, is when they'll start feeding on other fish. We order different sizes of minnows. So we start with what's called the tuffy size fathead minnow. And then they'll be on that for a couple of weeks and then they can get full-sized fathead minnows. And we're ultimately feeding them fathead minnows all the way up until October when they're ready to be stocked out. So,
yeah. So how many?
We started with 50,000 fish in each of these ponds.
So these are the fish. We were up here, we saw some of the fish, we saw some eggs come out.
Yep.
So those hatched and then were they split?
Yeah, so these, the same fish that are inside are the brothers and sisters of the fish out here. So they all hatched from the same group and we just split them out into these different ponds and into the systems inside. So we'll have what are ultimately the same fish that we're stocking both from outdoor ponds and our indoor systems. And we'll see which ones ultimately do the best once they're stocked out into the lake and which ones we get the better returns from. So
this is definitely more expensive.
At the moment, yes. Because minnow costs have gotten really expensive, this way of raising them is now quite a bit more expensive than raising them indoors. But that can change as minnow costs change. The other thing is you don't know the survival that you're gonna get out of these fish outdoors because they're exposed to predation and weather conditions. So we have a bit more control over that inside and we can ensure that we're gonna have a better survival, which makes that a little bit of a cheaper option.
Will these fish be tougher though?
That's what we're gonna hopefully figure out. They might be better at catching prey. They might be better suited to lake conditions because they've been raised in a pond. It's hard to say. So the sampling that we do in the next couple of years will really tell us the story on if our indoor fish perform just as well as these pond fish.
And we'll hopefully see it this fall, but how do you tell the difference?
Yeah, so we're going to be clipping different fins for our indoor fish and our outdoor fish. That way, when we do our surveys and we pull those fish out, we can tell if it came from indoors, from outdoors, or if it's a wild fish that hasn't been clipped. So we'll look at the relative returns of those different fin clips in our population when we're sampling.
And that'll be through bike nets, electroshocking?
Yeah, there's gonna be a variety of sampling. Electroshocking, we have creel surveys where anglers will tell us which fins they catch if they're aware of it. And also our population assessments that Glyphwick's gonna run next year, so. Yeah.
So, do you ever have any idea how, you said sometimes you can see them, but...
Yeah, sometimes you'll be able to see them, but you really don't have any idea what your survival is at any given time. What we do though, is we monitor water quality really closely. We're looking at dissolved oxygen constantly. We're looking at the phytoplankton population. We're looking at the relative phosphorus and nitrogen concentrations, and we're trying to keep them in the most optimal parameters for these fish to do well. And if we do all of that right, and we get lucky with the weather and get lucky with predators, then we'll get a good amount of fish out of here. If any of those things go wrong, it can change that equation quite a bit, and we might not get very many fish out, and that happens sometimes. So it's just a bit more of a gamble with these outdoor systems. Keeps it fun, of course, but it's a bit more challenging for sure.
What are the most common predators out here?
Yeah, there's...
I mean, you have a fence, you have some...
Yep, so you'll notice we have our fence and we have that flashing that goes all the way around, and that hopefully prevents any frogs and turtles and, you know, anything else from getting in. In practice, stuff still gets in, certainly. So those can be predators. Birds are far and away the biggest predators that we have to worry about. We'll get mergansers flying in here. We get kingfisher every now and then. There'll be herons that like to hang out in the shallows and probably do a big number on the population in these ponds. So part of it is trying to be out here enough to try to scare those birds away as well. But you can't be here all the time, so they're going to find a way. So we'll actually occasionally get otter, raccoons, all kinds of fun stuff that can come in here and take out your fish. So,
and
yeah.
You have how many ponds here?
So we have 4 ponds here, and we're currently running 3 of them. So,
and in theory, how many fry were put up?
We started with 50,000 fry right after hatch in each of these ponds. So, it's really interesting though, even though these 150,000 in total, yep, and roughly 80,000 inside, so a little bit of a different number. But it'll be interesting, even though these ponds are right next to each other and we're doing more or less the same thing to each of these, without fail we'll get quite a bit of different survival among these ponds. So that's why it's good to have replication when we're doing studies, right? So, but yeah, 150 fish in total in these ponds, at least at the start. Roughly 80,000 total indoors, and hopefully we'll get the numbers that the Lake Association and Red Cliff are looking for stocking, and enough numbers to get those returns for our study. So
Red Cliff has ponds as well, right?
Yep, Red Cliff has 3 ponds. They look a little bit different because they're lined with a HDPE liner, and that's one of the studies that I'm hoping to get funding to look at, is in the state of Wisconsin. The Wisconsin DNR has noticed that a lot of the walleye raised in ponds will have really skewed sex ratios towards female sex ratios in those ponds. And we're not really sure why. It could be due to temperature differences. Those lined ponds are darker, so the water temperatures might be warmer at critical periods. But it also could be due to something leaching from those HDPE pond liners that could have endocrine disrupting potential. So I've put in a grant to look at that, take water samples and look at if there's any endocrine disruptors that are at biologically relevant concentrations that could be causing those skewed sex ratios.
Essentially killing the males, not changing the males into females?
Nope, certainly not killing the males, but leaching compounds that mimic estrogen and can bind to the estrogen receptor and can therefore cause maturation and development to go a little bit differently for the males. Increase vitellogenin expression, which is a egg yolk protein that males aren't supposed to express. And you'll see males, otherwise male fish, producing ovaries and having testes that have ovarian cysts inside of them and stuff. So it's really interesting when that happens. So we'll be able to look at these fish and kind of see if that is happening with those plastic lined ponds. Because interestingly, we don't see the same skewed sex ratios in our clay lined ponds that don't have that plastic liner. Okay. So
are they technically hermaphroditic then? Or what is the, how do we describe that?
Yeah, so fish are really interesting in sex determination and maturation. So we're still figuring out a lot about processes involved in sex determination for walleye. It's looking like they're not XY sex determining, but a lot more research has to be done to figure out the exact mechanism for sex determination. There's a lot of organisms that have temperature-dependent maturation and sex determination, and it's possible that walleye fall into that category. So that's why we're also looking at the temperature aspect with those line ponds that might be a little bit warmer. That could be the mechanism and not endocrine disruptors for those skewed sex ratios.
So you can you sex the fish when you are stocking them when they're that size?
It's difficult. It's probably about as early as you can sex those fish. But we'll take subsamples and look at the histology and be able to tell if they have testes or ovaries
at that point. Okay, so in the lab you can do that, but not...
Yep. You wouldn't be able to take one and visually look at it.
Because I know, when you guys are in the spring, when you're harvesting eggs, you have to express them to try and figure out male and female.
Yeah, yep. And when they're 9 inches, it's almost impossible. There is sexual dimorphism, where males will be quite a bit smaller than females on average, but that's not a reliable enough metric that you can take a cohort and just measure them and say this smaller population is likely all male. So, yeah.
But otherwise, how does it look?
So, our ponds, we had a really overcast week last week, and that can be a challenge because even if we have optimal nitrogen and phosphorus ratios in the ponds, if we don't have sun, we're not getting that algal bloom that we want, and we don't have as good of a zooplankton bloom. So these are much clearer than we would like. We want them to be more turbid. The walleye like that, and the things that the walleye eat like that. So they're clearer than we would like. You don't want to be able to see the bottom generally.
Okay.
So, yep. But we have a nice sunny day, so hopefully that'll kick things off and we'll see some algal blooms and really good zooplankton hatch.
So all the stuff over here, that's good. That's what you...
Yeah, ultimately. Granted, we want the smaller algae, like the small little green algae. Mm-hmm. So not the large kind of filamentous algae on the top. So, yeah.
Okay. I think we're just going to get some B-roll out here.
Yeah.
And then we'll join you back.
Does their thing not working affect our schedule at all? Oh no.
As long as they start to hang time, it
yeah.
Seems to be able to come.
Sure.
Maybe we don't even desperately need.
Thank you.
Thank you.